It is quite simply the best week in golf. And for many of us, it's the best week in sports. On behalf of our executive producer, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin, happily welcoming you to the preview of the 2026 Masters Tournament, the 90th playing of golf's most prestigious event here on Musings on Golf. Folks, it all began in 1934 as the Augusta National Invitation Tournament, with the legendary amateur Bobby Jones welcoming his contemporaries at that time to compete on the layout that was designed by the famed Dr. Alistair McKenzie at the club that Jones founded along with the New York investment banker Clifford Roberts. And it was Roberts who originally floated the name The Masters. Jones thought it was a bit presumptuous, but by 1939, Jones relented. And from that point on, it's always been known as the Masters. It is the annual rite of spring. And as Rory McIlroy prepares to defend the title, that really catapulted him into the record books, becoming just the sixth player all time to record a lifetime Grand Slam victories. We'll be joined shortly by best-selling author Alan Shipnuck, author of the new book, Rory, The Heartache and Triumph of Golf's Most Human Superstar. Alan Shipnuck has been, when it comes to maybe having a little controversy, maybe being the best-selling author, he's got it all working. Had the book on out a few years ago about Phil that was a New York Times bestseller. We had Alan on our show previously in talking about his book about Live Golf versus the PGA Tour. He's covered nearly 30 Masters. We have 91 players this week, 22 first-timers. It's a lot of great stories. This is what makes the Masters so special. Ben Griffin is one of them. Ben Griffin, who promised himself that he would never even walk on the grounds of Augusta National Golf Club until he earned his way in. He won last year, played on the U.S. Ryder Cup team, and certainly earned his way into the Masters this week. He's one of the 22 first-timers. How about Brandon Holtz of Bloomington, Illinois? 39-year-old. He's a realtor by profession. Played basketball at Illinois State University. I mean, how incredible it must be for Brandon Holtz to be teeing it up alongside Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele. And he earned his spot, won the 2025 U.S. Mid-Amateur, which also gets him into the 2026 U.S. Open in June at Shinnecock Hills on Long Island. There's Mason Howell, 18-year-old high school senior out of Thomasville, Georgia, and he's the youngest player in the field. Howell won the 2025 U.S. Amateur at the Olympic Club in San Francisco. He's already committed to the University of Georgia. What an opportunity for his very first Masters. The Masters, for me, always is kind of a time to reflect as well. This is the first Masters since we started Musings on Golf that Bob Bupka is not going to be along to offer a story about his years of covering the Masters. I miss Bob dearly. Bob passed away last July, and I know he loved going to the Masters each year with our executive producer, Janice Self, and he will be sorely missed. I think about my dad, Max Elbin, who was the president of the PGA of America in the late 60s and was on the rules committee for the Masters and the PGA Championship each for 25 years. I may have said this story before. My dad was the first to tell me, at least in his opinion, that Augusta National was the original stadium course, that long before stadium courses were built for fans, Augusta National really kind of did that. And certainly Amen Corner is the one standout spot where when you stand behind the 12th tee, the par three, you could see the 12th hole. You could see the players hitting their second shot into 11 and Amen Corner. You can see them teeing off on the dog leg left 13 and hitting their second shots there. If you sit below the tee at the sixth hole, par three, which when you see it played on TV, you don't really necessarily see a fair amount of people who sit below that tee. They can see the action on six green. They can look over to the right and see the action on 16 green. And I think also just in the way that Augusta National positions the grandstands. Now, granted, that's not stadium golf per se, but they do such an incredible job of positioning those grandstands where you can see multiple sets of shots being hit at any one time on different holes. It makes the aura, the prestige of the Masters what it is. It's the most special event in golf. As you'll hear from Alan Shipnuck, we talked a little bit about last year with the incredible ebbs and flows of that final round, Rory McIlroy finally hitting that shot of a lifetime, that sweeping 7-iron into 15 green, where he almost inexplicably didn't make the putt for eagle, nonetheless going to 18, where he's in the middle of the fairway. And of course, you'd think he'd knock it on a two and win the Masters. No, dumps it in the bunker to the right, forces a playoff, and then hits a great shot in the sudden death against Justin Rose to finally win. Can that be topped? Shipnuck kind of weighs in his thoughts about the 2019 Tiger win at the Masters as compared to what Rory had to, you know, put himself through last year. You'll be interested to hear Alan's response. Rory McIlroy certainly has cemented his place in history. There's one small thing about this. Rory McIlroy has only won 5 major championships. He's only, and I mean that only in the, when I'm referring to great players winning lots of major championships, the PGA Championship is the only one that he's won twice. So yes, he is one of 6 that have a career Grand Slam. But Rory McIlroy has, in my opinion, has a lot of great golf ahead of him. Let's hear what he had to say as he is preparing for the defense of his title this week.
I feel comfortable on the golf course, feel comfortable with my game. It's been a good 3 weeks at home, you know, getting ready and, you know, physically and mentally, and just trying to prepare for everything that this week is going to sort of throw at me. And you know, I know that I can do it now, so you know that should make it a little easier for me to go out and play the golf that I want to play.
I'll tell you somebody who comes in this week feeling really good. That's J.J. Spahn. I mean, J.J. Spahn, who won the U.S. Open last year at Oakmont with the putt that lit up the golf world. He, he even kind of said he felt like he had to play at a high level every week. Maybe put a lot of pressure on himself. And he broke through with the win, not really broke through so much. He won for the second time at the Valero Texas Open in San Antonio. He had previously won there in 2022. But that win last week, I think, takes a lot of the heat off him. So I think that frees him up to play well this week. I reached out to Bob Herrick, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Now, Bob's got a new book out called Jack versus Tiger, or Tiger versus Jack. I got to be honest with you, I'm not sure the exact order, but we're going to have Bob on in a few weeks to talk about the book. And I asked Bob, who's your pick this week? And I've just got a lot of respect and good feelings towards Bob Herrick. And he said, I'm going with Scheffler. He said, I simply like the Arnold Palmer every even year vibe. And for Scotty, that would mean 22, 24, and then it would be 26. So Scheffler won the Masters in 22. He won it in 24. And so Herrick is looking for him to win this year. And he continued. And despite some recent issues, I think he works his way out of it at Augusta. And he alludes to the 4 victories that Mr. Palmer had at the Masters, which indeed came in every other even years from 58, 60, 62, and 64. We're going up to the Masters. It's been about 10 or 11 years since I've been there. I'm going to spend the 4 days up there with my brother, Max, who's making the trip down from Asheville, North Carolina. We're going to have just a great, great time. I'll give you a couple of thoughts on this from my standpoint as far as picks. Justin Rose, runner-up 3 times, 2015, 2017, and last year. Justin Rose is you have to have him high on your list this week. The other guy is Cameron Young. If you follow kind of the pattern that happened last year with Rory McIlroy winning the Players Championship and then going in to win the Masters, Cameron Young won the Players, huge breakthrough win last month. Cameron tied for 7th at Augusta in 2023. He tied for 9th in 2024. I like the form very much for Cameron Young, but I'll take Justin Rose. I will take him, and I'll take Alan Shipnuck anytime it comes to great writing, great journalism. The book is an absolute must. Again, Rory, the heartache and triumph of golf's most human superstar. He uses that word human because I think, you know, Rory is someone who has not been afraid to speak and has had a lot of, you know, a lot of foibles and a lot of the issues that many of us have. But he's come through, and I really have always been a huge fan of Rory McIlroy, and I think you'll be a huge fan of this interview with Alan Shipnuck, and you're going to hear it right after our friends from the Friars Golf Club, and you're going to hear also about the launch of the Masters-themed golf shoes from our friends at William & Harry Golf. Kelly Elbin here, and you're hearing this first on Musings on Golf. William & Harry Golf is unveiling the brand new Spring Championship Collection, and we're so very proud to be the first to announce it. Two stunning shoes, the Champions Walk and the Azalea, one designed for men and one for women, built on the same design nominated by Golf Digest as one of the best golf shoes of 2025 and quite possibly the most comfortable golf shoe in the world today. Inspired by the colors of golf's most iconic spring championship, greens, yellows, and the beautiful pink bloom of spring in the South. And I'll tell you this, these may be, in fact, the most comfortable and the most beautiful golf shoes created in 2026. The Spring Championship Collection officially begins today, so be sure to visit williamandharry.com to learn more about this exciting new collection. William & Harry Golf, spring has finally arrived, and it's all about William & Harry Golf. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work, planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Masters Week 2026 is underway, and as Rory McIlroy prepares to defend the title that catapulted him into the history books, a new book is out that covers the life to date of the most interesting figure in competitive golf today. Rory, the Heartache and Triumph of Golf's Most Human Superstar, is the title, and we are thrilled to welcome back to Musings on Golf terrific author Alan Shipnuck. Alan, first of all, congratulations on this terrific book. And second of all, how are you?
Well, I'm delighted to be here. I appreciate the kind introduction. And let's muse about golf. I'm ready.
Yeah. I guess maybe an obvious first question is, had a book on Rory sort of been in your mind for a while, or did the Masters win kind of push it to the forefront?
Well, it's a little hyperbolic, but not entirely. I mean, I've sort of been working on this book for almost 20 years. You know, I remember the first time I ever saw Rory swing a golf club. It was the 2007 Open Championship, and he was still an amateur, had the crazy curls, still had a little baby fat, did not look like, you know, a world-class athlete. But then when he swung the club, it was electric. And I distinctly recall guys on the driving range kind of stealing glances at this kid, because this was a different era. Like, speed was not king quite yet in professional golf, and here was this 5'8" dude, a little chubby, whatever, and just smashing the ball. And so that caught my eye, and I'd heard his name a little bit, you know, from the Walker Cup, but I remember asking a few of my colleagues from across the pond, and they're like, oh yeah, this kid's the real thing. So I've been tracking him his whole career. And, my last book was called Live and Let Die. It gets into this war between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. And, you know, that came out in the fall of 2023. And Rory was just this towering figure through that whole controversy. And he was the biggest troll of LIV Golf. He was, to a lot of people, he became the conscience of the sport. And I'd always been interested in Rory, but to me, as he became more complex, as he became more polarizing, meanwhile, there's also, he gets his heart stomped on at the Old Course at the 22 Open. He has devastating defeat at the 23 US Open at LA Country Club. And then he was just getting increasingly interesting. And so I actually committed to doing the book in the spring of 2024. Him winning the Masters supercharged the whole thing, but I was already deep into the project at that point.
Yeah, and complex is a good word to use because for a kid, an only child born in Northern Ireland to hardworking parents who've really dedicated their lives to him, the story has been anything but, singularly focused. Yeah, it was singularly focused early on to be the golfer that he became, but he has been and has taken on a lot more, certainly, than Tiger Woods ever did when he was in his prime. I mean, he really went, I guess you could say, above and beyond the call of duty, certainly for the PGA Tour against LIV.
Oh, yeah, he did. And then he was like sacrificed at the altar, and that made
Yeah.
the whole story more interesting and semi-tragic. And part of what draws us to Rory, I think, is sort of vulnerability and his emotional availability. You mentioned Tiger, like for 30 years he's talked a lot, but he's said nothing. I mean, every press conference is like a word salad, and his inner self is this well-guarded fortress. Like, none of us know Tiger, obviously. That becomes more apparent as time goes by. But Rory's open, engaging. He's curious. He's affable. I mean, he's just so much more accessible as a person. Like, you feel like you know him and you've been on this journey with him. And that's why the Masters victory resonated so deeply. Like, yeah, it's cool. He joined the Career Grand Slam Club, and he cemented his status as the greatest European golfer of all time. But the reason people were bawling in their living rooms and in the press room and in the caddy yard and in was because it was such a human experience watching his struggles for the last decade plus. And a guy who can command a golf ball like almost nobody else who's ever walked this earth, who could hit every shot but couldn't do it when it mattered at Augusta, and then to finally get it done in that roller coaster round when you could see the angels and the demons on his shoulders, it was just so intensely moving. Because in the final analysis, like, Rory has these superhuman gifts, but what that victory was all about was something, it was just so relatable. It was just about believing in yourself and like overcoming your fears and like never giving up on your dreams. And like, that is something that we can all relate to no matter what you do for a living. Tiger was this machine. It was thrilling to watch because he kind of represented the peak of human performance, but it wasn't relatable. He was like a superhero. Rory is a flawed person. He's a flawed golfer, and so it's much more compelling when he does break through because of the struggle.
Yeah, and Alan, he certainly was flawed at Augusta National. I mean, you've covered 29 Masters. Last year when he won, it was his 17th time trying to put on the green jacket. And obviously 2011 was the nadir, the tee shot on number 10 and the collapse with the lead going into on Sunday. But I do think, I had the good fortune with my job at the PGA of America of moderating press conferences during the PGA Championship and when it was a home Ryder Cup. And I got to know him a little bit. And he Rory has always struck me as an eminently likable person, number one. And then, as you said, very much he's inquisitive. He reads a lot. He wants to learn, and he soaks up knowledge. He goes to guys like Bob Rotella to help him open up his mind. He is an intriguing character. And I think you did a really nice job bringing it out in the book because there are a lot of parts of his life from growing up to becoming a professional and then obviously coming over here and being the star that he's become.
Yeah, it's a remarkable journey, and people know the broad strokes of Rory's story. But you can't emphasize how humble his circumstances were. And like, Of course, I knew that Rosie and Jerry, his parents, worked really hard. It wasn't until I got into the book that I understood the granular details. I mean, Jerry would get up at first thing in the morning, he'd go to this rugby club and serve as a janitor, and he was cleaning toilets and he's vacuuming hallways. I mean, it doesn't get any more blue collar than that. Then he'd go back to Hollywood Golf Club, this little working man's club outside of Belfast, and he'd serve as a waiter and as a bartender and he'd run home, have a little dinner with the family, and then he'd go back to the rugby club to serve as a bartender until midnight. I mean, this was like a 18-hour day. He did it over and over. And when he'd come home at midnight, he'd give his wife a kiss. She'd walk out the door and go to this factory and pack boxes all night. Like, you can't imagine a more soul-sucking existence than packing boxes all night long. And they did this because they recognized that Rory had this incredible gift. And Jerry was a really good golfer. His brothers were even better. Like, Rory's uncle Colm held the club record with a 63. On Rosie's family tree, there's some great athletes. She had a brother who played semi-pro Gaelic football, and Rory was born with some athletic tools, hand-eye coordination, whatever it was. But it was this obsession he had with the game, and he just played and played and played and built the skill set, and he was around good players, and they were almost haunted by this feeling like they had to do everything they could to really give him a chance. And so they worked this crazy schedule so Rory could go to San Diego and play in the Junior Worlds. He could go to Florida and play in the Orange Bowl, and see what real competition looked like. And it's a tale as old as time, parents kind of sacrificing everything for their kid, but their version is extreme. And we all know so many prodigies in golf and other sports who flame out and never make it. But the McIlroys as a family have lived their dreams. And that, I think, that was part of that warm kind of glow that surrounded the Masters victory. I mean, and it's analogous to what Tiger did. But, Earl Woods had so much bluster and bombast, whereas Jerry, he's just this low-key guy who still has that human touch of being a bartender and making everyone feel welcome. And Tiger Woods is this tough figure, whereas Rosie McIlroy is just kind of this sweet woman who doesn't say a lot publicly. And so there's nothing controversial or polarizing about Rory's story. It's just a feel-good tale. And that was honestly, I wanted to capture that in the book because, obviously my Mickelson biography was controversial. The Live and Let Die was kind of overheated. I don't want to do the same thing over and over. Like, I wanted this book to have a different tenor, a different feel. And it really is, it's a feel-good tale. And I was happy to capture that while at the same time, being clear-eyed about the controversies that Rory's had and some of his missteps and some of his foibles, because that's the job of a biographer. You have to tell the whole tale and capture the complete person. But in the end, I think Rory's is a good person who's carried himself a lot of grace growing up in the spotlight. And I was happy to celebrate that.
Now, and ironically and sadly so for Jerry and Rosie, they were not there last year when their son completed the career Grand Slam. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, they were just moving into a new house in Northern Ireland, and that was how the timing fell. But I also think they maybe stepped back on purpose, knowing that their presence adds a certain element. You saw how Rory was so emotional with his parents. Like, he's wanted to win the Masters for them as much as himself. And it was clear going into Augusta last year, he was the favorite. His game had gone to a different level in the wins at Pebble Beach and at Sawgrass. He'd spent the months before that working on his iron play, his short irons, his wedges. And why did Rory win the Masters last year after all that failure? I mean, the final analysis, he was just a better golfer. He had addressed his weaknesses, mid-range putting and wedge play, and he was just a little bit better. And then you had, Scotty wasn't playing well because he had hurt his hand, and Xander was hurt, and you go on down the list. I mean, it was probably the first time that Rory has been the overwhelming favorite going into the Masters. And I think everybody felt that. And it's like, let's just stay out of the way. And so, I mean, Jerry and Rosie probably could have moved into their house the week before or the week after. I think it was a decision they made just to give Rory a little more space to breathe. And it was, clearly it was the right choice.
Great story. Great story. So happy to be joined by Alan Shipnuck, whose new book on Rory is out as we celebrate Masters Week 2026. Rory, obviously, Alan, we've already seen the menu for the Champions Dinner that he'll be hosting. Nothing short of a lot of great food and wine. They talk about a reflection of wanting to win that event for so long. The menu certainly came out that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of an eye roll. Again, Rory's a working class kid, and he's got the foie gras and the fancy wines. It's like, come on, bro. Like, we know where you came from. And, but, you know, two of his confidants are JP McManus and Dermot Desmond. I mean, they're, you know, these billionaire businessmen type. Jimmy Dunn is very important to Rory. He's another captain of industry. Like, it's really... it's really a measure of how far he's traveled in life. And so I guess we'll grant him this, you know, this very decadent meal. It would have been more fun to me if he just served a classic old Irish, you know, working class menu. Give me the boiled cabbage. Give me the bangers and mash. Like, you know, celebrate your roots. Because the, and again, we've been talking so much about the Masters menus. It's like kind of an eye roll. But like, you know, when Faldo won, he did shepherd's pie. And people still talk about Olathabal, this great Basque cuisine. You know, Vijay Singh had that, you know, the flavors of Southeast Asia.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, I think the Rory's just trying to impress people when really it should be about where you're from and who you are. So it's... I feel like he's trying a little too hard, but whatever. It's his night. He can do whatever he wants.
Alan, this is really such a fascinating interview. Tell you what, let's take a short break and hear why Coach Urban Meyer loves William & Harry Golf, and then find out from William & Harry about their two new Masters-themed golf shoes.
As a coach, I've always believed the little details matter. Preparation and discipline. Having the right equipment. That's why I wear William & Harry Golf shoes. They're the most comfortable and classy shoes on and off the course. You'll appreciate the difference. William & Harry Golf Shoes, comfort, class, and championship standards.
Kelly Elbin here, and you're hearing this first on Musings on Golf. William & Harry Golf is unveiling the brand new Spring Championship Collection, and we're so very proud to be the first to announce it. Two stunning shoes, the Champions Walk and the Azalea, one designed for men and one for women, built on the same design nominated by Golf Digest as one of the best golf shoes of 2025 and quite possibly the most comfortable golf shoe in the world today. Inspired by the colors of golf's most iconic spring championship, greens, yellows, and the beautiful pink bloom of spring in the South. And I'll tell you this, these may be, in fact, the most comfortable and the most beautiful golf shoes created in 2026. The Spring Championship Collection officially begins today, so be sure to visit williamandharry.com to learn more about this exciting new collection. William & Harry Golf, spring has finally arrived, and it's all about William & Harry Golf. I know you put in a tremendous amount of research and time into this book, but I have to tell you, the first thing that caught my attention was the cover itself. I mean, you've got it certainly looks like a modern day Rory McIlroy. It looks fairly serious. It's got the words Rory in all caps at the bottom. It's very striking. You said there's a story behind that cover.
Yeah. So some authors just, they're not involved in the cover design. I care deeply to the point that it drives the people at Simon Schuster crazy. And so we kind of had this idea. We want a real striking image of Rory. So I poured through hundreds, maybe thousands of photos till I found that one. And then there's an intensity about it that's interesting. So that became the cover. And the design, I sent the picture to the designer, send me back the cover. And it's like, I said, God is beautiful. I love it. I said, but you know, I have a little bit of an ego. Can we try a version with my name on the cover? That's kind of normal for a,
That's true. It's not on there.
Not on there. And so they did send it to me, but it just didn't look as good. The simplicity of the cover as it is was what drew me toward it. And so I said, as a commercial decision, maybe it's questionable. Like, you know, I've written a lot of books and some people might, having my name on there might attract a few readers, but as an artistic decision, it was easy. And then it was like, okay, well, if the front is that simple and beautiful, the back has to be too. So, kind of helped design that. I was like, you know, a lot of books have like the blurbs from other writers, like, oh, this is the greatest book ever, says John Grisham. I was like, I don't want any of that clutter. Like, let's keep it super simple. And so, yeah, I think it's a beautiful, design, and I'm really happy with it.
And the back cover, obviously, Rory's on his knees after making the putt, beating Justin Rose in sudden death with his fist clenched, finally winning the, or getting to the, career Grand Slam. Hey, I want to ask you about, we talked about Northern Ireland and him growing up and his parents. You described it as Rory really not having a sense of country. I wonder, Alan, elaborate on that a little bit, please, of growing up in Northern Ireland, who he chose to represent in the Olympics and the issues. And even to the point where it sounds like even at the beginning of his play in the Ryder Cup, he was a little bit uncertain there.
Yeah. It's part of Rory's story. You know, he's 8 years old when the Good Friday Agreement is signed, and that ends the troubles, you know, the civil war on the Irish island between, you know, sort of the traditional Catholics and speaking Gaelic in the South and the British influence in the North. You know, they were loyal to the king going back hundreds of, and Protestant going back hundreds of years. And I actually get into the history of Ireland. It's important to understand. And so Rory has had to walk this line his whole life of this complex identity because, you know, his parents were Catholic, but they grew up in Northern Ireland, which was heavily Protestant. And so the McIlroys have always had to be this sort of apolitical and sort of secular folks in this complex environment. And I think that's why Rory is such a world citizen. You know, he's clearly the greatest global superstar since Gary Player, and he's done it in a much different media age. I mean, I think we can safely say that Rory is probably the most worldwide star that golf has ever had. You know, Tiger was bigger, but, and he would take the occasional foray to Dubai or whatnot. But Rory, I mean, he's played all over the world. Yeah. He's been based on the European tour. He's lived in Monaco. He's lived in Dubai. I mean, Rory is a global force. And I think it comes from this upbringing of you have to be everything to everybody. And he didn't really ever want to identify with one side or another. And of course, the Olympics, as you said, brought this to a boil because was he going to represent the Republic of Ireland or was he going to represent Great Britain? And either choice was the wrong one. And he was going to upset people either way. And it's unfortunate that he, and that gave him these complex feelings about the Olympics initially. Now, one thing about Rory is, he speaks from the heart and he's passionate, but he will also change his mind and walk things back. And he gets criticized for that. But to me, you can look at it as an admirable trait, like that open-minded, because a lot of us say something or make up our mind about something and then we refuse to hear the other side. And to me, you know, to Rory's everlasting credit, he will take in the information and he'll think about it and he'll say, you know, I think I made a mistake. And it's not easy to admit mistakes for any of us, especially when he has such a public life. So, why is Rory comfortable in any room? Why can he mingle with anyone? I think it's because of this complex sort of search for identity he's always had.
And the Ryder Cup, like he initially, not to the degree of Tiger sort of brushing it off as an exhibition, but based on what you wrote and what I've heard, he didn't really understand the enormity of the Ryder Cup until he got into it and then representing all of Europe. And now we've seen not only embracing it, but really thriving off of it and he's the star of the European team.
Well, he's just a towering figure in the Ryder Cup. Rory is going to go down as the most prolific winner in the history of the Cup. He is the connector between two eras of European dominance. I mean, you know, he plays in his first Ryder Cup in 2010, and you've got the old dogs in that team, the Westwoods, the Poulters, the Sergios, the Stensons, and of course they dominate. They are responsible for the miracle at Medina. You know, they have this great run, and then those guys age out and or go to live golf and are marginalized, and there's this whole new European team that Rory has to shepherd, and they're still dominant. And you know, he's been a part of six winning Ryder Cup teams. The only player in the modern Ryder Cup who has more is Lee Westwood with seven. And Rory's going to play in another 3, 4, 5 Ryder Cups. He's going to win more Ryder Cups. And he's only 2.5 points from being third on the all-time individual points list. He's going to keep ascending that ladder. And it's a funny thing when talking about the legacies of great players, like almost no one ever mentions the Ryder Cup, except for Seve, who, of course, he's earned that. But it's just another way to measure Rory's impact and his greatness, because he, you know, Evan, it's the biggest event in golf. It's golf Super Bowl, and he has dominated it. And, you know, I get into all this in the last chapter of the book, like, where does Rory rank in the pantheon right now? And he's clearly one of the dozen greatest players of all time. And I put him ahead of Phil Mickelson, Nick Faldo, Lee Trevino. And those are guys who have one more major than Rory, but they don't have his global impact. You know, Phil never got to number one in the world. He never won a money title. I mean, Rory's won 3 money titles in the US, or what we call FedEx Cup, you know, trophies, but it's really the same thing. He's won 7 in Europe. You know, he's done everything. He's won all around the world. Like, even though Phil has more PGA Tour victories, when you add up Rory's worldwide wins, he's at the same level. So I'd already put Rory ahead of those guys. And to me, the Ryder Cup is also a tiebreaker. I mean, you know, Phil's Ryder Cup record is awful. It's embarrassing. And Rory's is dominant. And so it's just another part of his legacy, how much he cares, how much he rallies that team. And it's, you know, you can't overstate how challenging an environment Bethpage was. And Rory was a monumental presence there. To win 3.5 points in partner play and to stake Europe to this insurmountable lead, I mean, it's one of the greatest performances of his career and probably any player ever in the Ryder Cup.
I want to take the Bethpage discussion a step further. And obviously, I worked for the PGA of America for a number of years. My father was the president of the PGA, et cetera, et cetera. But Alan, the PGA of America did themselves no favors at all that week at the Ryder Cup. I mean, it just, and the fallout from their CEO is no longer there. The president of the organization has been silenced. It was from an American perspective, a colossal failure, not even to speak of losing the matches.
Yeah. I mean, I've been saying for years leading up to Bethpage, I hope they don't sell alcohol there. You know, it was predictable.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, New York fans, you know, pride themselves on being assholes. They just do. And they had been abusive towards, you know, foreign players at the US Opens at Bethpage. Like,
going back to Sergio, right?
Sergio, yeah. You don't have to be a genius to see that it's a bad recipe. And of course you want the Americans to have a home field advantage. You want the fans to be loud and noisy and partisan, but it just crossed so many lines, and it was a failure of leadership, and it was a failure of planning by the PGA of America. And it frankly took away from the events. I mean, almost no one has talked about the brilliance of the European team. It's been all about how embarrassing the American fans were. I mean, that's a disservice to Team Europe. It's a disservice to the entire event. It was dispiriting. At the same time, as I said, Rory just elevated himself even further as a competitor and as a leader. And the Masters gives an incredible crescendo to the book, but I needed one more chapter. I needed an ending to the book. And, you know, I certainly got a great one at the Ryder Cup, because the Masters was kind of this redemption of Rory as a competitor. And I felt like the Ryder Cup was a redemption for him as a man, as a husband, because, you know, his wife, Erica, was dragged into a lot of the abuse. In fact, most of it from the crowd. And yeah, it was completely inappropriate. And she handled herself with a lot of dignity, as always. And Rory spoke about her in the Champions press conference with more emotion than he's ever displayed towards her. And on Saturday afternoon, after that last match, I saw her in the crowd and I kind of walked over to be close to her, because I knew Rory was going to make a beeline for her when it was over. And he did. I was right there, and they had this incredibly passionate embrace, and, you know, both of their eyes were glistening. And he just said to her, "I love you so much." It was like so much feeling. And of course, the whole world knows they'd had their marital problems. Rory filed for divorce the year before. They reconciled. And, you know, we've all had our ups and downs in our love lives. And it's hard to imagine anything more challenging than having to try and salvage your marriage with the whole world watching. But they did. And it was really a beautiful moment, and kind of a redemptive arc for Rory. And he talked very movingly that night about it was the best year of his life, and he's so lucky, and he's so thankful for Erica and for their daughter and for his parents. And it just gave the book a really happy ending that, you know, I think Rory deserves.
Yeah, I agree with you. And just hearing what you're saying, I mean, you're speaking very movingly about him. It did. He needed, I think, more than anybody else in golf, he needed that exclamation point. He needed that Masters victory. He needed the story to finish correctly after all that he's been through. And I think your book brings that out, Alan.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, as the biographer, it's not my role to tell people how they should feel about the subject. You know, with the Phil Mickelson book, I just try to present who he really is. And there's a lot in there about his philanthropy and his random acts of kindness and his mentorship of other players. And, you know, Phil's done a lot of great things in his life, and they deserve to be celebrated. But there's also been a lot of messiness, and there's been a lot of controversy, and that's in the book too. And people, it was quite interesting how split the opinion was. A lot of people read it and said, you know, I actually like Phil more. Like, I can see he's, you know, he's not perfect. He's flawed. And I can relate to that. I was like, that's great. I'm happy to hear that. And other people said, I used to be a Phil fan, and now he's lost me because the way he treated his caddy and a lot of other things that are in the book. And I said, okay, well, I understand that too. And I don't have an agenda. And it's the same with Rory. You know, I get into his controversies, and I get into his breakups, and I get into his missteps, because that's who he is. But ultimately, I do think I think the end of the book is moving. I do think that it's a feel good story, because he's been through all that. He's learned, he's matured. The hurt and the anguish has played out publicly. And he's become stronger and better for it. And that, you know, that's all of us. Like, we all have so much adversity in our lives. It's not as dramatic or as public as what Rory's gone through, but it's relatable. And so, you know, again, I'm not trying to win fans for Rory. That's not my job. I'm not a publicist, but I just think when you tell his story, you can't help but admire his determination and his class and the way he's carried himself.
We're in our closing minutes with Alan Shipnuck, whose new book, Rory, The Heartache and Triumph of Golf's Most Human Superstar, is now available anywhere you're interested in purchasing terrific books. Couple final questions. At the outset of this book, you talk about a young Rory trying to find out who Tiger Woods was. And obviously, over time, both of them are Nike guys. They worked together to transform the PGA Tour with the signature events shortly after LIV Golf came to be, and then now with the TGL that you see on ESPN. What's that relationship like between the two of them now, Alan? Are they friends, or are they more just guys who care deeply about golf and about the tour?
Well, they're both, but it's complicated. You know, Tiger was always Rory's hero and mentor, and he's been very open about that. And through the tour wars, you know, battling LIV Golf, they became great allies and they reshaped the tour. And I would say Rory was probably the most important figure in this evolution of the tour, as a board member, as a guy who was on the firing lines every time he teed it up. And you know, Jay Monahan was hiding in his office. You know, Rory was out there every day, every week, and he was the voice and the face of the PGA Tour as it was fighting for its survival. And he, along with Tiger, helped reshape the business model, reshape the competitive model. And just as Nicklaus and Palmer are celebrated for kind of birthing the modern PGA Tour when they had this insurrection against the PGA of America, like, you know, Rory helped save the PGA Tour. And then he was kind of sold out by the backroom bureaucrats, and that's also part of the tale. But you know, him and Tiger became very close, and then after the framework agreement came down, you know, again, people criticized Rory because he changed his position, but it was a very pragmatic, nuanced view. And he said, listen, if I can take myself out of this, I can see that the Saudis want to invest in the sport. It's better off that we bring them into the fold than we battle them. And we can use their energy and their money, and we can improve our product. And so while he didn't love it personally, he saw the professional merits of trying to forge this truce and bring this sport back together. Tiger is an Old Testament guy. Like, he once those dudes left for LIV, he wanted to punish them. He does not want reconciliation. He wants them to suffer. And so he's a big reason why the framework agreement was never consummated and why the game is still fractured. So as they were trying to solve this quagmire, there was this push to get Rory back on the board. He had been on there after the framework agreement. He resigned a little bit in protest, but more just like, okay, I fought as hard as I can fight. You guys figure this out now. And but Tiger basically blackballed him because he did not want a voice of, you know, that's conciliatory in the room. And so that's how ruthless Tiger is. And you know, his friend and their business partners and founding the TGL and everything, and he still screwed him over. And so that tells you a lot more about Tiger than Rory. And now we're in this moment where Tiger's stepping back from tour business. He's been sort of de facto running the tour. He's the chair of the Future Competitions Committee. If he vacates that seat, there's a very good chance that Rory will go back. He'll take that pl his Tiger's place, and maybe we'll be able to solve this mess that golf is in after all. And so this little backroom drama is interesting, but at the same time, you know, we haven't, it's amazing, we haven't really talked about Tiger's travails yet in this
Yeah.
podcast.
Wanted to ask you about that. Sure.
Credit to you, Kelly, because I think that if there's anyone on the planet who can look Tiger in the eye and speak truth to power, I think it's Rory, because Tiger respects him. They are peers. You know, there's only four men alive who've won the career Grand Slam, and Rory is one of them, and obviously Tiger is too. And so they are co-equals in a lot of ways. And Rory has enough compassion, and he still has enough affection for his old hero that I think he would take that on, because clearly Tiger's hurting in a profound way and he's lost. And I think not having people around him who can really speak to him, you know, Earl Woods was the guy who could do that. And it's not an accident that it was after his death that everything started going sideways for Tiger. And there's been this vacuum in Tiger's life for 20 years where I don't think anyone can really tell him the hard truths. I think Rory could in a really profound way. And I would love to see him try, because Tiger needs that. And it would be really, you know, it'd be moving that Tiger was Rory's mentor in a lot of ways and his North Star. And the roles could switch, because I honestly believe if you gave Tiger truth serum and you asked him, would you trade lives with Rory? I think he'd say yes, even though there's not as many glittering trophies up on the mantle. You know, Rory's universally beloved and respected. He's welcome everywhere he goes. His body's not broken. He's going to be able to chase after his daughter and his grandkids in a way that Tiger never will be able to, the way he smashed his body up. And if Rory wants to go out and play golf when he's 80 years old, he's going to be able to do that. And that's clearly been taken away from Tiger. And so it's poignant, the divergence in their journeys. And I just feel like Tiger doesn't have a best friend. He doesn't, you know, the people he grew up with are all on his payroll now. They run a design company that they're employees, but they can't really tell him what he needs to hear. And, you know, Rob McNamara is an employee. Mark Steinberg is an employee. Like, these guys have obviously been on some level enablers, and Rory doesn't need anything from Tiger. He doesn't need a thing. And so I think he could come in there and really tell him the hard truths.
You think his voice, or Rory's voice, would be stronger than, say, Jack's? Because, as you say, they are peers.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Tiger respects Jack, but it's such a different generation. There's an affection there, but there's not a closeness. And Tiger and Rory have been close. I mean, after Tiger's last accident, you know, in 2021, Rory went to his house and was actually the first time he'd ever been inside Tiger's house. And he was really there for him. And so, I think Tiger knows that Rory cares in a deep way. And I do think he has that credibility to that Tiger might listen.
Alan, let's close with looking this week at Rory as the defending champion. How do you see him playing this week? Who do you like going into the 2026 Masters?
Yeah, obviously Rory had that little ding in the gym and his back hasn't been 100%. I think it is now, but it compromised his preparation a little bit. I think that's actually okay. It lowers expectations. It's like, well, he hasn't won yet this year. He hasn't played as many, doesn't have the tournament reps. So I think that just turns down the temperature around Rory defending in a way that helps him. And I think on Thursday, he's very likely to shoot 62. I think there's also a chance he'll shoot 79. Like, he may be a little emotionally overwhelmed, or he may be a little flat, because it's like, been there, done that. And after the fever pitch of last year's Masters, or you could just go out there and say, this is the easiest round of golf I've ever played. There is absolutely no pressure, and just birdie every hole. And
yeah.
I don't think he's going to shoot a boring round of 72. I think he's going to go really deep, or it's all going to go sideways. And that's just kind of how Rory is. And so, but I would not be the tiniest bit surprised if he mounts a very strong defense. And, you know, Rory's very aware of his place in golf history. A lot of guys have won Masters, you know, your Danny Willett's, your Schwartzels, good players, but not legends of the game. Rory wants to be in a different category. He wants to win multiple Masters. He wants to win back-to-back Masters. That puts you into very rarefied air. And so, I personally, I think he's going to play great, and I expect him to be there late on Sunday afternoon. You know, it's an interesting Masters, and there's not really a favorite. I mean, it's going to be Scheffler by default, but he hasn't played his best golf this year. He's obviously been a little emotional on the course. He's been a little grumpy. Now, you know, he's got a new baby, which maybe that'll help and get him back into the right headspace, but golf has not been his priority the last few months, understandably. So I think John Rahm is dangerous. He's been playing at a very high level on LIV Golf, which people tend to discount, but I mean, he's been there every week, and the guys at Data Golf have him, you know, as the best golfer of 2026. And they usually know what they're talking about. And he's a man of immense pride. Since he went to LIV, he hasn't contended in a major. And I think he feels that. So if I had to make a pick, I would say Rahm is kind of my guy, but I wouldn't be the slightest bit surprised if Rory wins his Masters by 5 strokes.
What about DeChambeau real quick? What are your thoughts on him? He's played very well.
He has
on LIV.
He has, but the weakest part of his game is his iron play and his distance control. And that's the most important factor at Augusta National. And you saw that, like, in the final round last year.
Yes.
Rory's iron play was so much better. And, you know, Bryson had this falling out with LA Golf. They were making his irons. And I think that's it's going to expose him in a way that is just cost him the few strokes of the difference between winning and losing. So, you know, Scheffler's such a better iron player than DeChambeau. So is Rory. So is Xander. So is Rom. I just feel like that's the difference maker. So now if Bryson has one of those weeks where he's just hitting it every fairway at 380 and he has wedges and the putter gets hot, of course he's dangerous. But I don't know, until he shows me that his iron play has improved significantly, I'm not a believer.
One final question before we go. I think our listeners would love to know, Alan Shipnuck, you covered both Tiger's win at the 2019 Masters and then Rory last year. Which was the greater story? Which was more emotional in your opinion?
They're close. I would say Rory, because of this quest he'd been on for over a decade and because the whole world was pulling for him. You know, Tiger's had his controversies, and at that point, he's only 2 years removed from his first DUI, and he was just a little harder to cheer for certain people. And it wasn't as thrilling. You know, there was all that craziness around the turn, and then everybody hitting the water on 12. And once Tiger got the lead, you know, credit to him, he flushed it on coming home, starting on 13. And there was never a sense he was going to lose. Nobody was really making a good enough run, and he was in control of his golf ball. So it was an incredible achievement, but it wasn't as thrilling as what Rory put us through with the highs, the lows. And, you know, Justin Rose's incredible, you know, six birdies on the back nine. And he was such a spirited pursuer, and this sense of it was never over till it was over. And so Tiger, it was a fitting capstone to his career because, I mean, I've been in every major championship he's ever won, and the accomplishments are thrilling, but frankly, a lot of them were boring because he would take control on Sunday and you just knew he'd never make a mistake. There was never a sense anyone was going to catch him. And that was how it felt in the last, you know, six holes of that Masters. Whereas Rory, it was such a roller coaster and such a thrill ride. And he hit some of the best shots in Masters history and some of the worst. And it just made it absolutely unforgettable. So I'd give what Tiger did was monumental, but I would still give Rory the edge.
Book is Rory, The Heartache and Triumph of Golf's Most Human Superstar, from Simon & Schuster. And what, Avid Reader Press, is that a division of Simon & Schuster?
Yeah, it's an imprint. My longtime editor, his name is Jofi Ferrari Adler, he's had so much success that they gave him his own kind of publishing house within a publishing house. So
nice.
Shout out to Jofi. And it's great. I've been writing books for him for a long time. So is Michael Bamberger and others. Like he loves golf. He venerates the tradition of golf literature. So that's helpful for all of us because there's not many folks left who are writing books about golf. We're sort of keepers of the flame. So it's good to have an advocate.
Folks, get out there and get this book. Enjoy the Masters. And Alan Shipnuck, thank you so much for taking time to be with us on Musings on Golf.
Kelly, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Alan, thank you. That was absolutely terrific. And thank you all for joining us once again on Musings on Golf. Next week, just a lot of great insights and comments on the Masters. Excited to see how everything turns out at Augusta National Golf Club. Can Rory McIlroy successfully defend? Will my pick Justin Rose finally get over the hump? What about Cameron Young? Who's out there that I'm not talking about? Is it Xander Schauffele's time? Will there be a stunner? Who knows? Thanks again for joining us here on Musings on Golf.